It seemed that Dalinar had been four people in his life. The bloodlusty warrior, who killed wherever he was pointed, and the consequences could go to damnation. The general, who had feigned distinguished civility, when secretly he longed to get back on the battlefield so he could shed more blood. Third, the broken man, the one who paid for the actions of the youth. Then finally, the fourth man, most false of them all. The man who had given up his memories so he could pretend to be something better.
Heroes of presents The Storm Pod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 3, Oathbringer.
This is just a quick spoiler warning for chapters 100 and 101. Yeah, that's a lot of chapters. If you haven't picked the right episode or you're behind on your reading, make sure that you are all caught up or you pick the right one because we wouldn't want you to get spoiled here. This next chapter is quite heavy. I have a feeling that when Jack and I record this Dalinar chapter, it's going to be a lot of emotions and it's going to bring up a lot of stuff. So spoiler warning for if you are triggered easily by addiction or any of this kind of stuff, if you, just listen with caution. I think it's going to be a big one. Anyways, we really hope that you enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and he has to get the fuck out of here. It's Dalinar. Oh, and Jack's here, too. What's up, dude?
What's up? Well, quite a lot, actually.
Yeah. I gotta get the fuck out of here.
Well, there is a song that goes, "Something's up with Jack."
Right.
But I think something's up with Dalinar. Yeah. And it's not so great. This I've been in fear of for quite a while.
Yeah.
This chapter blew my mind.
You were just saying off record here that Dalinar and Navani and everyone else has put in all this time and effort to putting together this coalition, to making...
of the nations.
To making all these leaders of all these different countries see that, you know, we're not warmongering, I'm not the Blackthorn anymore, and he's about to become that fucking guy again.
Well, or some version of it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that I would like to remind myself, so I don't get too nervous, that even as the Blackthorn, he did as commanded by his brother.
Right.
It wasn't like he was total loose cannon all the time as the Blackthorn.
Right.
That's not the story we have.
No.
But, becoming unglued, like this, seeing the further fracturing, it's funny again, the fracturing, eh? That's kind of like Shallan's experiencing it.
I love, in the chapter he said, he talks about how he's been four men in his life.
Yes, we'll cover that.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to cover every inch of this thing because, what a great chapter.
It is a great chapter. I told you last episode, I think, that I couldn't wait till you read this one. We've had really good sessions of us talking about Dalinar with the thrill and addiction and, just his anger and impulse control and Blackthorn versus Diplomat. And this this is a culmination of a lot of stuff that we talked about already. So it's really great.
It's so complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Let's just jump into it because we're going to be covering every inch of this thing.
Yeah.
This is chapter 100. Mm-hmm. Wow. What a number for this chapter.
I know. It's like perfect.
It is. It really is perfect.
Yeah.
So it begins with, first of all, it's called An Old Friend.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
an old friend. And of course, we do get Taravangian in here. We get a little double meaning on this. Mm-hmm. The old friend, of course, probably more so the thrill.
Yeah.
But we do get Taravangian in there to make the title more interesting. And I've always thought, like, there's a few movies. There's one movie in particular, a horror movie called Exorcist Part 3. Mm. And there's some sort of nasty things going on where they think the Gemini killer is escaping his prison and accomplishing further murders. Mm-hmm. But he's trapped in the cell the whole time. So how is he doing this? And he says, old friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very, so I find an old friend is just a very creepy, cryptic,
yeah,
coupling of words. It's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
It begins with, I am convinced that Nurgaul is still active in Roshar. The accounts of the Alethi thrill of battle align too well with ancient records, including the visions of Red, Mist, and the dying creatures.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is just where we're at in this with Hesse, with Mythica,
mm-hmm.
that it's confirming Nurgaul definitely alive and active. Now, have we had a personification of Nurgaul in the series so far?
Like seen an actual creature, like, yeah. We've seen Ja'anat, and like we've seen,
right.
We have not, we've seen, you know, the Midnight Mother. We've seen a personification of the Midnight Mother. We have, yep. not seen Nurgaul. We've only ever felt its effects on Dalinar, mostly Dalinar. Some other, we've heard of it. Well, in this chapter, they talk about how the civil war in Yakaved got way worse because the men wouldn't stop fighting.
Right, wouldn't stop fighting.
Yeah.
Now, hang on. Do we have from this as well, from these Hesse, from this these Mythica excerpts? Do we have confirmation that Nurgaul is like a force rather than a,
yes,
individual?
Yeah, I think that the, yeah. last chapter they said that right. Nurgaul and Moloch are more like forces. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that was Ashutmarn.
Ashutmarn, yeah.
Hold on, let me get back to the chapter 89. So it says Moloch and Ashutmarn were more like forces. So Nurgaul didn't get grouped into that, but...
No.
It's,
but it
hard
kind
to,
of would seem like it, right?
It
because
does seem like it.
It permeates, you know, if it's not just affecting Dalinar, mm-hmm. it's affecting these huge numbers of other soldiers.
Right.
Here.
Well, Dalinar says,
like,
in this
a
chapter,
civil war.
We'll get to it later, that, you know, Dalinar for a little bit thought that maybe he had overcome the thrill.
Right.
But
yeah.
It wasn't that. It was that the thrill had moved on and that its radius had gotten too far away for him to feel it. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
And that when he was on the Shattered Plains, he thought, oh, I had overcome it.
Right, but it's just
but
proximity.
It just means that the Nurgaul moved, and its radius of influence moved as well. And so he couldn't feel it in the Shattered Plains because it was coming here to Yakaved to do this, to expound,
wow.
the Civil War.
These Unmade are a real problem.
They
I
are
know.
A fucking problem, bro.
They need to... They need to get organized and get more information about them and consider some type of assault on them.
Or like a really big intervention. Like, okay, Unmade,
well,
we know that you guys like to do these things, but maybe try not doing them.
No, but you're up again. So I don't know. It seems cosmic. I don't know if there needs to be new relationships forged in order to accomplish that, mm-hmm. either involving heralds or other gods.
Yeah.
Or something like that to battle these Unmade. It seems getting more cosmic. But when you say intervention, that's what I think Dalinar needs immediately.
Yeah.
By the band.
Like, he walks into like a room, and then all his friends, all the characters are there,
yeah.
and they're like, "Hey, buddy, why don't you come and sit down?" And he's all like, "What is this?"
Yeah. What is this? Yeah. Absolutely. Cameras are rolling. Everything's,
well,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, we make jokes about it, but at the very end of this chapter, we're going to get there too. We're going to bury the lead a little bit here, but at the very end of this chapter, he turns to the, yeah. drink again.
I know. And do you know what my thought was there?
Good.
Good.
Yeah.
I'll take anything to keep this down a little further until some help can arrive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird. Interesting how I love that you're made to feel that.
Yeah.
When little Renarin knew where to find the booze liquor, to give his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And even his Rial, his guard.
Yeah.
Like, that's how much these people care for him.
Mm-hmm.
And love him. That they love him so much that they're willing to, you know, I guess sort of understand his pain enough that they know that he might need a little to get by.
It's crazy though. Like, it's crazy that we're on the side of alcoholism, but
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. It's crazy.
No
that
way am I saying
we are celebrating. Okay. Yeah. You know what? Drunk Dalinar is probably better off.
I feel like this alcohol buys time.
Yeah. Well, you said, before we started recording, you said, like, for a couple of times in this chapter, you thought, one, that Dalinar was going to attack Taravangian when Taravangian shows up with the shield.
Or Taravangian attacks Dalinar.
Right. And then kind of spins it like, oh, he just went nuts and he attacked me.
Right.
And then that moment when he's like, if I don't leave, I'm going to kill these fucking Ardents. Like, any one of these moments could have played out where Dalinar loses it.
Yeah, there were so many moments. And the other thing, too, that I thought was brilliant was how it was welling up inside of him.
Mm-hmm.
The more time he spent with the men.
Yeah.
It's when he visited the barracks, if you will, like these tents, these temporary areas inside the city wall, when he's walking amongst the men, seeing the injured and seeing the other, like, that's when it really started to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it really kind of reminded me, like, wow, it's like the proximity really is just being amongst the instrument of war.
Yeah.
It's the machinery.
Yeah. It's very, like, familiar, all the smells. Well, he said when he could smell the smoke.
I know. Well, that reminded him of Rathalos.
Right. Which kind of spins him out, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes him at his worst.
And it makes him more susceptible to the thrill as well, right?
Yeah.
Right,
okay,
we've
got to dive in because, wow. What a great chapter. Dalinar remembered almost everything now.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, great. Then tell us about the Night Watcher.
Right. That's what you
next
thought?
Next sentence.
And then, yeah.
Next sentence. Oh, Matt, thank you, Brandon, Mr. Sanderson. You covered your bases here. Though he still hadn't recovered his details of his meeting with the Night Watcher. Oh, okay.
Right.
The rest was as fresh as new as a new wound, dripping blood down his face.
Mm-hmm.
There had been so many more holes in his mind than he'd realized. The Night Watcher had ripped apart his memories like the fabric of an old blanket and then sewn a new quilt out of it. In the intervening years, he'd thought himself mostly whole, but now all those scars had been ripped free and he could see the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth that he keeps seeing is that he's the Blackthorn. He's an animal. So right there, I find that is, you know, that's the wretch. That's a spiral. You're only seeing yourself because of your past misdeeds. You can't forgive yourself. You are only hearing the echoes of everyone else around you, who is basically confirming that. And that doesn't mean that it's actually the truth. I'm much more in favor of the idea that the truth is plural, mm-hmm. and that it is complicated, more like the quilt he describes.
Right.
He tried to put all of that out of his mind as he toured Vidinar, one of the greatest cities in the world, known for its amazing gardens and lush atmosphere. Unfortunately, the city had been devastated by the Vidin Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Then the subsequent arrival of the Everstorm. Even along the sanitized pass that he was walking for the tour, they passed scorched buildings and piles of rubble, which reminded him of what he'd done to Rathalos.
Mm-hmm.
And so Evie's tears accompanied him, the cries of dying children. Hypocrite, they said. Murderer. Yeah. Destroyer. Like, he's it's the past haunting you.
Yeah.
And it's you not able to forgive yourself. Again, spiral, wretch.
We just talked last episode about how similar Zeth and Dalinar's journeys are right now.
Oh, yeah.
Where Zeth is also hearing voices, whispers from the dead that he's killed that are haunting him as well, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's nice that these things are... It's not nice, but it's apropos that these things are lining up. It's so nice that they're lining up.
I wonder if these two meeting could have something... Imagine if the assassin in white and Dalinar could actually have a conversation about their pasts.
Much like Shallan and Kaladin just had a conversation about trauma, like, last episode. And how, like, just talking to each other seemed to help. I like that idea.
I don't know if we would get it. I doubt we would get it.
Zeth needs to be invited to the intervention then, I guess, is what we're saying.
Zeth needs to be invited. Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Okay, the air smelled of salt. And was filled with the sounds of waves smashing on cliffs. How could they live with that constant roaring? Did they ever know peace? Dalinar tried to listen politely as Taravangian's people led him into a garden. I find that these crashing waves, it's like, for me, it was a bit of symbolism that, you know, it's just the thrill is constantly, you know, wearing you down.
Mm-hmm.
Relentless. One of the few, okay, full of low walls, yeah. One of the few that hadn't been destroyed in the Civil War. The Vedans loved ostentatious greenery.
Right.
Not a subtle people, all brimming with passion and vice. Yeah, I really like that about this city and the way it looked.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, Dalinar's he notes that it's so unusual to see people that look like my people. They look Alethi.
Yeah.
But they're different, and they're culturally different, and they.
But there's a lot of similarities too, because they're both Vorn cultures, so
right.
They both believe in the same kind of things.
Right.
But they are different, right?
Yeah.
Some of the structures that they live under, with the high princes and all that stuff, is all similar.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some differences.
The wife of one of the new Vedan high princes eventually led Navani off to inspect some paintings, and Dalinar was instead led to a small garden square where some Vedan light eyes were chatting and drinking wine. There were rare plants in this area, and lifespren were bobbing out around them. He's thinking more small talk.
Mm-hmm.
"Excuse me," Dalinar says. "I'm going to take a moment to survey the city." One of the light eyes raises their hand and says, "Well, I can show you. No, thank you." And he started up the steps. Perhaps that was too abrupt, but it did fit his reputation.
Mm-hmm.
His guards had the sense to remain below at the foot of the steps. He reached the top of this area, trying to relax. He had a nice view of the cliffs and the sea beyond, but unfortunately, it was not in good shape. The walls were broken. The palace was nothing more than rubble. The city had burned, including many of its plate-like terraces that had been Vedan showpieces. On the fields north of the city, black scars on the rocks still showed where heaps of bodies had been burned following the war. He tried to turn away from all that and look out at the peaceful ocean, but he could smell smoke, and that wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
Smoke had often sent him descending into one of his worst days.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is almost like the perfect storm. It's
yeah.
kind of like...
It's got everything.
It's kind of like... It's like when Navani gets led one way and he gets led another.
Mm-hmm.
It's like fate intervening that he has to go a different path.
He has to walk it alone for now. Yeah.
And be... Well, just be confronted with this. It's... I don't know. It feels like destiny is happening, I guess, for this character.
Mm-hmm.
And for good or bad, we are going to get something... Well, I would say another storm is coming, I guess is what I would say.
Right.
I'm hoping not. I'm hoping, like, when he clutched the Wave Kings, dude, I was getting, like, sad at that moment at the end of this chapter. When he went for the Wave Kings.
Yeah. Oh, man, I thought, that's like a heartbreaker. Because it he even says, I can't even read it. Like, what comfort is it to him? He's just holding a book that he can't even read.
I know.
It's not like he can go to the book and find solace in there by reading some of the chapters and some of the paragraphs to kind of like bring solace to him. He's alone in that room shaking, about to explode, and he can't even fucking read it.
How is he absorbing the Way of Kings?
It's being read to him.
Who is translating? Read to him?
Yeah, and then now he knows it by heart now because it's been read to him so many times.
Right, right, right.
But that doesn't help in that moment.
In that moment, does it? Yeah.
Imagine like someone like, you know, very religious going to the Bible and they're looking for a passage that will comfort them in a moment of extreme distress, and they open it and it's all just gibberish and they can't read it. They can't find solace in it, right?
Well, this is what I'm saying. Like, it's like the perfect storm. You've got a character that just needs a few things in place from someone else outside of him to help him.
Yeah,
it could be an interpreter for the Way of Kings. It could be his. It could be his niece Yasna's there to say something that snaps him out of it. It could be a soldier that's there that gives him the alcohol, maybe even drinking with him and talking of other things to take him out of it.
Like, bring out who back, yeah. You know?
Yeah, like, it, there's just so many little variables that could be there but aren't there.
Yeah, and you're right. It is a perfect storm of things that line up for him to get there, yeah.
Why? I can't help but think of, why is he not with Navani? Why did she go one direction and he had to go this way to be alone and then go through this? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Anyways. Lifespan brought me, but I'm going to survey the city. Yeah, gets up, looks around, and the smoke just seems to make everything worse. And he thinks to himself, storms, I'm stronger than this. He could fight it. He wasn't the man he'd been all those years ago. He forced his attention forward and stated purpose of visiting the city, surveying the Vedan martial capabilities. Many of the living Vedan troops were barracked in storm bunkers right inside the city walls. From reports that he'd had earlier, the civil war had brought incredible losses, even baffling ones. Many armies would break after suffering 10% casualties, but here, reportedly, the Vedans had continued fighting after losing more than half of their numbers. Mm-hmm. So at this point in reading, I didn't clue in to the thrill having had accomplished this, let's say.
Yeah.
Perhaps they'd been driven mad by the persistent crashing of those waves. What else did he hear? More phantom weeping. Taln's palms, he exclaims. Dalinar drew a deep breath, but smelled only smoke. Mm-hmm. See, this is what I mean. Like, he can't even catch a breath of fresh air.
Without it being something that reminds him of all the shit. Yeah.
Like, the smoke is just, it's choking him. It's choking him with it.
Yeah.
Suffocating. Like, it's again,
funny, because when they first thought to do this, they're like, let's go tour Yakaved. We'll get away from Urithiru.
Yeah.
It might be nice to get away. And it's like literally Yasna's going thing. Into the worst place possible. Where the thrill is mostly located, where there has been burned buildings, where there is just pain and suffering everywhere. Like, it's literally the worst place they could have went. Maybe they should have been like, let's take a trip to the Reshi Isles where everyone's frolicking around naked. That would have been a better vacation.
You know what? You know what, though? Maybe there's something here. Like, maybe Brandon, Mr. Sanderson is kind of... Maybe there is more hope than we realize. Hmm. Dalinar took himself out of this entire situation.
Yeah.
He went against the Stormfather's wishes and used the Oathgate and went to Urithiru.
Yeah.
He went back to his room.
Yeah.
I think, and I'm hoping you would agree, that is the best thing that he could have done. On his own.
Yeah.
He doesn't know where his son is. He doesn't know where Caladan is. Yep. He doesn't know where Shallan is. Mm-hmm. There's been no reports.
Yeah.
So in a way, you could look at this and say he did the best that he could.
Right. He faced it and he was able to get away and he didn't succumb to it.
Yeah.
You're right. It's not a victory because it ends with him drinking.
Well, and but again, as you and I discussed, I'll take it.
Yeah,
like I'll take a
for now. Yeah,
lose. Yeah.
I mean, it's a Band-Aid, but it is what it is, right?
Yeah. I just hope it's a fine. Oh, it's wine. I think it was a violet. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a violet wine. Yeah, it was a strong one.
I was hoping for a fine Scotch, but actually no, because you don't guzzle Scotch. That's not what you do. Well, okay, so. What else did he hear? More phantoms weeping, only smoke choking him. Yeah, I like this idea of everything around him is choking him, can't breathe. Why must I have these memories? He thought, angry. Why did they suddenly return? Yeah, I'd like, that's the missing piece. The Night Watcher and why the memories are flooding back. Is it maybe a similar thing to the thrill? Is it proximity with the Night Watcher? Is the Night Watcher moving on?
Yeah.
I don't know. Mixing with those emotions was a growing fear for Adolin and Elokar. Why hadn't they sent word? If they'd escaped, wouldn't they have flown to safety or at the very least found a span reed? It seemed ridiculous to assume multiple Radiants and Shardbearers were trapped in the city, unable to flee. And that could have meant that they hadn't survived and that he'd sent them to die.
Yeah.
Dalinar tried to stand beneath the weight of it all, but he knew too well that if you stood true straight, you'd risk fainting. Why was it that trying to stand tall should make you so much more likely to fall?
Okay, so we got to pause here for a little bit, okay? We have some stuff to talk about here. First off, minor spoiler. I don't do this often, but there is a chapter.
Spoiler.
There's a chapter coming up in the Sanderlange called The Weight of It All.
Oh.
And the first little foreshadow we get is here in this Beneath the Weight of It All.
Beneath the Weight of It All, yeah.
Right. So there's a little bit of a hint here coming.
Oh, wow.
The other thing, too, that I want to talk about for a little bit is this last line here, which is like one of my favorite quotes, is why was it that trying to stand tall should make you so much more likely to fall?
Right.
And I think it has to do, like, I think he's talking about, like, you know, he's like, unfortunately, he knew too well that if you locked your knees and stood too straight, you risked fainting. So it's more of like a practicality of, like, of, you know, standing and probably the soldierness of it all. But I love this line. Why was it that trying to stand tall should make you more likely to fall? And I feel like the metaphor here is that trying to stand tall on your own, trying to bear the weight of it all on your own was more likely to fall. And this gets back to what we already talked about maybe last episode a little bit, right?
Kalida needing Shallan.
Yes. All these characters who are dealing with this mental stress, this mental illness, they're all doing it, trying to do it on their own. And last episode, we saw that Cal went to Shallan and was like, how do you do it? How do you deal with all this? You have a trick to deal with it. I wish I had that trick. But it wasn't even about learning a trick to do it. It was just the talking about it that made them both feel better. So I think that this is what Sanderson is saying here, is that it is easier to stand tall if you have someone you can lean on than trying to stand tall on your own.
Yeah.
Will make it easier for you to fall over if you're trying to do it on your own because of the weight of it all. So I really love this, like, there's this through line of this metaphor that's, you know, we just had two characters talk to each other, feel better about things. I mean, not very much better, but at least a little bit better. They were both smiling in the chapter, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just like how Dalinar is, like, and he's not just talking about himself here. He's talking about Shallan, he's talking about Kaladin, he's talking about Zeth, he's talking about all the characters that are going through, you know, all the people who are going through something that are trying to do it by themselves.
I see this as a mental health issue, if you will, because if you're trying to stand tall, the question is, well, what's preventing you from being able to do it fully?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you have to try in order to do it? How come you just can't stand tall?
Right.
So what is it? And in his case, it's his past.
Right.
It's the Blackthorn. It's the memories. It's Evie. It's Rathalas. It's everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to deal with that first.
Right.
In order to be able to stand tall. Now, you're right, though, that if you're going to stand at all through this journey, I think, what's the line? I get by with a little help from my friends.
There you go.
Right? So you're right. He needs the band. He needs Navani.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hope that that both could happen for him.
Yeah.
That he could actually deal with his past, like forgetting, like the Night Watcher whole component of mm-hmm. forgetting. It's not the answer.
No, it's not. And it never was the answer.
It never was the answer. The Night Watcher, I see it, it's the same thing as the alcohol.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly that.
It's not the answer.
Mm-hmm. So because the alcohol is helping him forget, and so did the Night Watcher.
Right.
Yeah.
It's what he needs is a deep understanding of understanding forgiveness.
And it's what we kind of talked about before.
Yeah.
About how, you know, you kind of found this like secret theme last episode that, you know, I made sure to like kind of call out, which was, yes, memories is a huge theme in this book, but so is forgiving yourself for your past deeds, forgiving yourself for the way you feel sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, all the characters are going through it
as well. Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good.
Dude, it's huge. This is a beast of a chapter.
Mm-hmm.
It sent them to die more likely to fall. His guards parted to let Taravangian shuffle through up to this gazebo area. Mm-hmm. The old man carried an enormous diamond-shaped kite shield,
mm-hmm.
large enough to cover his entire left side, and he sat down on one of the benches, panting. And I thought, as I mentioned to you earlier before we started to record, I thought, what is going to happen here?
Yeah.
I don't trust Taravangian.
Yep. We already know his mission is to undermine Dalinar in this coalition. He's already admitted it to us in an interlude. So we know it's coming.
So he brings a shield like, oh, I barely... So maybe he could have...
Antagonized Dalinar.
Antagonized him to lure him into some kind of confrontation or battle. Yeah. And I barely survived because of the shield.
Right.
Or I didn't know what he had in mind with the shield. It just made me nervous.
Yeah.
And so it didn't unfold that way, mm-hmm. which is always a delight because, of course, your mind is wandering and then Mr. Sanderson's able to delight you because that's not the
way it went. That's not where it's going, yeah.
Right, which is great. Anyway, did you want to see one of these, Dalinar? Taravangian asks, holding out the shield. Dalinar took the shield, hefting it. Half shard, he asks, noting a steel box with a gemstone inside. Indeed, Taravangian says, crude devices. These are legends of metal that can block a shard blade, a metal that falls from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Silver, but somehow lighter. I should like to see that, but for now, we can use these. Okay, so silver that falls from the sky.
Yeah, like meteor rock style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Cool.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Who are those that mine this or find this?
We don't know.
Metal. Yeah, there's a whole process there. Dalinar grunts, you know how they make those fabrials, don't you? Taravangian asks Dalinar. With enslaved Spren? Spren can't be enslaved any more than a Chull can. I find that response
mm-hmm.
is... I took it to mean, yeah, you're already sliding.
Well, this is Dalinar saying that.
I know it is.
Yeah.
But I feel that point of view.
Oh, right.
Is very like
close-minded and like
aligned with the thrill.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Well, you know, that's.
Of course, Chulls can be enslaved. That's what you've hooked them up to harnesses and you use them as beasts of burden. They're your animals, sure, but they're still doing your work like you would have used a Parshendi for or a Parshman for.
Right. I just feel like it's a line that kind of says, well, it's in their nature to pull enslaved.
Meaning they are Spren are there for us to do that too.
Right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I find that's not Dalinar way of kings. I'm a changed man. See the world differently.
Right.
that's not him. Right. That's a line I find from The Thrill.
I love how he says it, and then the Stormfather rumbles distantly right. in his mind.
That's a remind. That's why I took it to mean that, because I put an asterisk beside mm-hmm. the rumbling.
Yeah.
That's the Stormfather saying, how dare you say that?
Yeah, whoa. Yeah. Those are all my children.
Right.
Yeah. Or siblings or friends or whatever. Like, they're family to me.
Yeah, dude, I loved this chapter. Oh, I'm telling you.
Jack is just goosebumps the whole time. He's literally recording it. With his arms up towards the camera the entire time.
I loved it. I loved it. That gemstone, Teravangian says, imprisons the kind of spren that gives things substance, the kind that holds the world together. We have entrapped in that shield something that at another time might have blessed a Knight Radiant.
So it's not like they've trapped like a fire spren or a wind spren or an anger right. spren, one of these lesser sprens. They've yeah. trapped a potential like nail bond.
Bonded.
Yeah, spren. A spren.
A yeah spren?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Anytime you say, oh, yeah, a spren appears, and that's the yeah spren. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He couldn't deal with this philosophical problem like this right now, today. Mm-hmm. He tried to change the topic. Well, you seem to be feeling better. And see, again, we talked about that earlier before we recorded, too. He doesn't want to deal with philosophy. Like,
no.
You know what? This whole topic of enslaving the spren. Yeah. Sell that somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't want to think too hard about things right now. Yeah. Let's get this out of my head.
Yeah. You seem to be feeling better. And Teravangian says, well, it's a good day for me. I feel better than I have recently, but that can be dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm prone to thinking about mistakes I've made. Teravangian smiled in his kindly way. I try to tell myself that at the very least, I make the best choice I could with the information I had. I mean, come on. This is Teravangian.
He's like reading Dalinar and just saying all the things.
He's grooming him. Yeah, this is. Oh, don't worry about your past, Dalinar. You know, it's like he. You know what? It's like he can hear the inner voice of Dalinar.
Almost, yeah. He knows.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Well, I'm going to say this. I don't have any proof of this, but but Teravangian has the diagram.
Yeah,
and might have already. Predicted
all
that
this.
Dalinar was going to be in this state at this time.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Wow.
So
yep.
I love this when he says, I feel better than I have recently, but that can be dangerous. Like the better he feels, the more dangerous he becomes. The smarter he gets, the more dangerous he is.
Ooh, now that gets a little complicated, because is he saying that to Dalinar to remind him that, oh, it's the same with you too.
Yeah.
If you want to feel better, meaning not so, conflicted with all of these memories, the feel better is that you get more aligned with the thrill.
Right.
But it can be dangerous.
Or you could feel the way you're feeling right now. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think he's saying it like that, but it's definitely written like that by Sanderson to evoke that from us. So
yeah. Ooh, that gets a little more complicated. We need it more complicated, I guess. Unfortunately, I'm certain that I didn't make the best choices I could. Dalinar says, but you wouldn't change them, because if you did, you'd be a different person. I did change them, Dalinar thinks to himself. I erased them, and I did become a different person. Dalinar set the shield beside the old man. Tell me, Dalinar, Teravangian says, you've spoken of your disregard for your ancestor, the Sunmaker. You called him a tyrant. Like me, mm-hmm. Dalinar thinks. Well, let us say, Teravangian continues, that you could snap your fingers and change history. Would you make it so that the Sunmaker lived longer and accomplished his desire, uniting all of Roshar under a single banner? Turn him into more of a despot? Dalinar asks. Well, that would have meant him slaughtering his way all across Azir and into Eerie. Of course I wouldn't wish that. But what if it left you today in command of a completely unified people? What if his slaughter let you save Roshar from the Voidbringer invasion? You'd be asking me to consign millions of innocents to the pyre. Those people are long dead, Teravangian whispers. What are they to you? Numbers in a scribe's footnote? Yes, the Sunmaker was a monster. However, the current trade routes between Herdaz, Yakaved, and Azir were forged by his tyranny. He brought culture and science back to Alethkar. Your modern Alethi cultural eruption can be traced directly back to what he did. Morality and law are built upon the bodies of the slain. Wow.
Yeah.
And this, of course, this resonates with all of us. I mean, take a look at what any of you have. And of course, it's, you know, appears to be born out of a river of blood, right?
Yeah. I mean, we have some examples of that in our world too. You know, Alexander the Great and Napoleon, a man's want to conquer ends up eventually, you know, spreading something of their culture around, which, you know, ends up being a good thing, but the conquering part was never warranted. And you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't a good thing that they went and took their armies and took out all these different cultures who were also evolving at their own rates.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, sure, you spread Greek exceptionalism with Alexander the Great, or culture and art and philosophy and all that stuff. But what about those other cultures that were developing on their own rate, and the things that they would have developed on?
Of
you know
course.
What I mean? So he has a point, but it's not a great one, you know?
No, well, of course, well, it is a great debate.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that what Teravangian ultimately is saying here is the end justifies the means.
Right, of course. Well,
right?
This is the debate that they've always had, the two of them, right?
Yeah.
Even when they talked about killing the three, you know, one of these four men, remember that conversation they had before? One of these four men have committed a crime, and how do you, like, and Teravangian's like, I kill all four of them, and I know that those crimes won't continue.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, that's the same debate, right?
Yeah, it's... It's him trying to, again, he's trying to say exactly what's required to get Dalinar to look back almost favorably on what he did
on
do
what his
and
life
accomplish.
Was. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Basically, I see Teravangian here as very sneakily trying to get Dalinar to not regret a thing.
Right. He's a Blackthorn apologist.
He's a Blackthorn apologist. Yeah, I suppose that could be. I really can't think about this right now. Dalinar is thinking inside. He says, excuse me, I need to go check on Navani. And he strode from the gazebo and down the steps. This surprised me. I figured there would be more to that Teravangian conversation. But again, Dalinar is doing his best. He's on his own. He needs to get away.
He's like feeling it. He's like, I can't right now.
He strode, bustles past Rial and his other guards, and they followed him. They towed in his wake like leaves after a strong gust of wind.
Mm-hmm.
I love how the wind just...
is always there.
Permeates this. Yeah, I love it. He didn't go look for Navani, but perhaps he could visit the troops.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the wind seems to almost be pushing him towards it. And going seeing the troops was the worst thing he could have done.
Yeah.
He walked back along the streets, trying to ignore the destruction. This city felt off to him. Yeah. So many buildings had plants draping and dangling from every window. It was strange to walk along these streets full of people who looked Alethi but spoke a foreign tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, Dalinar reached the large storm shelters. You know what? I hadn't really thought about that. Maybe he's thinking about that, thinking, yeah, you know what? What if the Sunmaker did unify all of this?
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have these different tongues.
Right.
We wouldn't. There wouldn't be this oddity to things. There'd be more of this uniformity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Personally, I'll take the quilt.
Me too.
Eventually, Dalinar reached the large storm shelters right inside the city walls. Soldiers had set up these tents, these temporary things that could be taken down at a moment's notice. Dalinar found himself growing calmer as he walked among them. This was familiar. This was the peace of soldiers at work. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't it just be terrible that the peace for this man is war?
Right.
And that's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? The officers were here welcomed him, and generals took him on tours of the bunkers. His ability to speak their language was something that he had gained with his abilities with the bondsmith. I thought that was cool, but you know what? There's something else here, too.
Mm.
They were impressed by his ability to speak their language because of his bondsmith abilities. But I also, I'm not sure if it was in here. It's almost like the language, though, is the language of war.
Right.
It's not just that he's speaking their language. It's that
he's speaking their language.
Right.
Yeah.
It's even more intimate than that.
Right.
All Dalinar did was nod and ask the occasional question. But somehow he felt like he was accomplishing something. At the end, he entered a breezy tent near the city gates where he met with a group of wounded soldiers. Each had survived. When his entire platoon had fallen, heroes, but not the conventional type. It took being a soldier to understand the heroism of simply being willing to continue after all your friends had died.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting that it's this time here amongst the wounded where he is confronted with the, you know, the greatest sort of confrontation, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The last in line was an elderly veteran who wore a clean uniform and a patch for a defunct platoon. His right arm was missing. A younger soldier led him up to Dalinar. "Look, Gved, the Blackthorn himself. Didn't you always say you wanted to meet him?" The older man had one of those stares that made him seem like he could see right through you.
Mm-hmm.
What do they call that? The mile long. There's a phrase. Hang on, I can't remember it now. The mile long stare or something like that in battle. Brightlord, he says, and saluted. "I fought your army at Slick Rock. Sir, Brightlord Nalinar's 2nd Infantry. Storming fine battle that was, sir." See, this conversation is disturbing to me.
Yeah.
This is someone who fought against you, and you're talking about it like glory days.
Yeah.
You were trying to kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
You're complimenting each other on what a fine battle.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you're proud that you lost your arm, that you're missing an eye, that you're wounded. I find it really disturbing that there's like comfort and connection amongst the wounded.
It's because like they both survived that time, you know?
Yeah.
And they're bonded that way.
I know, I guess. Yeah. But it's the like, bond is,
it's like you see, it's like
war.
When you see two like retired athletes who fucking hated each other in the moment.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, and
that's
then can like
that's
afterwards and
comparison.
Go, remember the battles we had?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you, even in like hockey's even worse. You can have two guys sit around and reminisce about all the times they actually fought each other.
Yeah, actually injured each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, you gave me a good one that time.
But it's there. I believe that there is, and there is a disturbing element there.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know, like there's something about it that is not quite right.
It's like an amount of respect for your enemy and how well they fought, you know?
Yeah. See that I can deal with. So mm-hmm. Dalinar's respect. Those were good times, Brightlord, good times before everything went wrong. "What was it like?" Dalinar asks. "The civil war, the battle here at Vednar. It was a nightmare, sir." Gved, the younger man, said, "Well, let's go. They have food." "Didn't you hear him?" Gved says. "He asked. Everyone dances around me, ignoring it. storms, sir. The Civil War was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
See, maybe I'm actually delighted that this little conversation's happening with Gived, this injured man. Fighting other Vedan families, Dalinar says.
Well, this is when Dalinar starts to really realize, oh, the thrill has been here and is here.
Right.
Yeah.
And this old man says, that was the problem.
Yeah.
It was horrible because the thrill was here.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't call it that because he doesn't know to call it that, but he knows something else was up.
Right. The old man says, it wasn't that, fighting Vedan families. We squabble as much as you do, sir. Pardon that. But I ain't ever felt bad fighting my own. It wasn't the Almighty. It's what the Almighty wants, right? But that battle, nobody would stop. Even when it should have been done, they just kept right on fighting, killing, because they felt like killing. So it's interesting how the younger soldier who brought Gived here, it was like, oh, well, let's turn him away. Let's not have him
let's
say
not talk
this.
About this.
Yeah. I think it's this is almost a glimmer of hope in a way that is trying to, convey to Dalinar. No, this was the part that was wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't
and
think
then another
it,
man
it
starts
quite
to,
has that effect.
To talk here too, which is nice. It seems like everyone was being kept, it was keeping quiet, but now that one person's opened up, another person opens up here.
Right. It burned in us, he says, another wounded man who wore an eye patch. You know it, Bright Lord, don't you? That river inside of you, pulling your blood all up into your head and making you love each swing, making it so that you can't stop, no matter how tired you are. Yeah, the thrill.
Mm-hmm.
It started to glow inside Dalinar, so familiar, so warm, and so terrible. Dalinar felt it stir, like a favorite axe hound, surprised to hear its master's voice after so long.
Yeah.
He hadn't felt it in what seemed like an eternity. Even back on the Shattered Plains, when he'd last felt it, it had seemed to be weakening. Suddenly, that made sense. It wasn't that he'd been learning to overcome the thrill. Instead, it had left him to come here.
That's a great, great little nugget there.
It
because
is.
It really tells us, it reinforces what we know about the unmade and their effects and how they're mobile.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so he thought he had done something where he had overcome it.
Right.
But that's not the case.
Left. So what happens if it comes in proximity to, let's say, our little band in Shadesmar?
Well, they're probably safe in Shadesmar, I would think, but I don't know. But maybe not. I don't know. I really don't know how Shadesmar
from
works.
From the unmade?
So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, this is a really complicated thing because I, talking with these wounded soldiers, it seemed to make things worse.
Mm-hmm.
And then a part of me rereading it with you here is, I'm wondering if there's supposed to be some little nuggets in there about saying, look, no, this is actually bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like what happened in the Civil War was terrible.
Yeah.
And it was because of the thrill.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, 50% losses?
Yeah.
Dalinar as a general should know that's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Did others have you feel this? Dalinar asks. We all did. Another of the men said, and Gived nodded. The officers, they rode about with teeth clenched in rictus grins. Men shouted to keep the fight and maintain the momentum. It's all about momentum.
Momentum is the title of the first flashback chapter we get with Dalinar.
Right. Momentum, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Once it gets going, it can't be stopped.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
It's a locomotive. I know, that's the whole thing with this thing with Dalinar.
Yeah.
Others agreed, talking about the remarkable haze that had covered that day. Losing any sense of peace he'd gained from the inspections, Dalinar excused himself. His guards raced to keep up as he fled. Even faster, as a newly arrived messenger called out to him, as he was needed back at the gardens, but he wasn't ready. He didn't want to face Taravangian or Navani, or especially Renarin. He climbed the city wall. Inspect the fortifications. That's why he'd come. From the top he could again see those large sections of the city burned and broken in the war, and the thrill called to him. Distant and thin. No, Dalinar marched along the wall, passing the soldiers. To his right, waves crashed against the rocks. Shadows moved in the shallows, and beasts two or three times as big as Chul, their shells peeking from the depths between the waves.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It seemed that Dalinar had been four people in his life. The bloodthirsty warrior, who killed whenever he was pointed, wherever he was pointed, and the consequences could go to damnation. The general, who had feigned distinguished civility when, secretly, he'd longed to get back on the battlefield so he could shed more blood. And third, the broken man, the one who paid for his actions of the youth. And then finally, the fourth man, most false of them all, the man who had given up his memories so he could pretend to be something better.
Mm-hmm.
That's this chapter, dude. I mean, it's crazy.
I know. It's great.
That's nuts. You know what's funny is that as you go through each of those, it seems to get less and less, I guess, real,
mm-hmm.
or less and less like his nature or like his force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, it depends on how you perceive it. Our theme from Words of Radiance, it depends on your perception.
Perception, yeah.
So you can look at yourself as this force, mm-hmm. rather than an individual.
Yeah.
And you're a force, like, how did he describe himself? The Dalinar had been four people, the bloodthirsty warrior.
Does it say the bloodthirsty warrior in your book?
Yes.
Mine says bloodlusty.
Oh, sorry, You know what? I read it wrong. It's lusty in my
okay.
Too.
I wasn't sure if it had changed, because you know how are certain vocabulary changes and like word changes from
I read it wrong.
Okay. I was curious.
The blood lusty warrior
makes it like way more nasty.
Well, he's more like a force, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then you step back from that. Okay, well, if you're not just a bloodthirsty or bloodlusty warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're a general in charge, which means maybe you can pull back on the reins of your men. Like, okay, mm-hmm. not just full bloodlust. Let's have it be a little more organized, like a general.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next step down from the general is the broken man who says, well, I do have to take responsibility for everything that's transpired here. And then you step away from the broken man, and then you're finally the fourth man is, well, I'm going to become something else.
Right.
And it's full pretend. It's shalom. It's veil.
Right.
It's something else that you're creating.
Right.
Dude. Again, the connections with these characters.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Holy jeez.
Jeez, Louise.
Come on, Louise. Okay. Dalinar stopped, resting one hand on the stones. That's like a peaceful moment for me, I find. He's going through all of these characters, puts one hand on the stones
to
steady himself.
For me, it gets back to the not being able to stand on your own two feet because of the weight of it all. He's now having to rest on the stone because he can't. He's going to collapse.
His guards assembled behind him, and a Veden soldier approached from the other direction along the wall, calling out in anger, "Who are you? What are you doing up here?" Dalinar squeezed his eyes shut. "You, Alethi, answer me. Who let you scale this fortification?" The thrill stirred, and the animal inside of him wanted to lash out. A fight. He needed a fight. "No," and he fled again, hurrying down a tight, constricting stone stairwell. His breathing echoed against the walls, and he nearly stumbled and tripped down the last flight. And he burst out onto the street, sweating, surprising a group of women carrying water. His guards piled out after him. "Sir," Rial asked. "Sir, are you... Is everything..." Dalinar sucked in stormlight, hoping It would drive away the thrill, but it didn't. It seemed to complement the sensation, driving him to act. "Sir," Rial asks, holding out a canteen that smelled of something strong. "I know you said I shouldn't carry this, but I did. And you might need it." Dalinar stared at that canteen. A pungent scent rose to envelop him. If he drank that, he could forget the whispers and forget the burned city and what he'd done to Rathalas and to Evie. So easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny because in that he's realizing it's so easy to do, it's not really the answer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Dalinar knows that.
Because he doesn't take it right away. He could have taken it right there.
Could have took it right there.
Yeah, but he knows that's not the answer.
And he's fighting the thrill who the thrill certainly doesn't want him to douse his concerns in alcohol. He spun away from Rial. He needed rest. That was all, just rest. He tried to keep his head up and slow his pace as he marched back toward the Oath Gate. The thrill nipped at him from behind. God, I love that.
Like he's running from it.
Like a hellhound.
Yeah.
Like nipping at his heels.
Yeah.
If you become that first man again, it will stop hurting. In your youth, you did what you needed to be done. You were stronger then.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. He growled and flinging his cloak to the side, looking for the voice that had spoken those words, his guards shied back, gripping their spears tightly. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
They're seeing him transform.
Yeah, they're afraid of him right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The beleaguered inhabitants of Vidnar scurried away from him. Is this leadership? To cry each night? To shake and tremble? Those are the actions of a child, not a man. Leave me alone, he exclaims.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting comparison there. Like, do you want to be the cowering child?
Yeah.
The one who flinches?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Do you really want to be that? Does
right.
that sound like leadership?
Right.
But you know what? I find that it is. That is the mark of a great leader,
mm-hmm.
is to hold your hand,
mm-hmm.
to hesitate, aspire to be something greater.
Mm-hmm.
It might just be the cowering child that's what's required.
Right.
This is a deceptive lie. Give me your pain. Oh, man. The thrill is asking for your pain.
I'm gonna bring wow. something up here.
Okay.
Earlier in this book,
mm-hmm.
there was a moment where Moash was distraught and did not know what to do. And a voice came to him.
Yeah.
And said, give me your passion. Give me your pain.
Right. Were the same words used? Give me
yeah.
your pain? Wow. I didn't remember that. Uh-oh.
And at the time, it seemed like it was his own inner monologue.
Right.
I think you may have even asked, is this an actual voice that he's hearing?
Right. Wow.
The connections and the similarities between the two moments.
Yeah.
I cannot let go unnoticed.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because it might explain again the proximity moving.
Mm-hmm.
The thrill, one of the unmade.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Moloch? Are we associating with the thrill here?
The thrill is Nurgaul.
Or Nurgaul, sorry, I got those mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
Moloch's
the one that lets you have visions of the future as you die.
Right. So Nurgaul could be targeting Moash.
Could be. It could be something other than Nurgaul.
Or it could be something else, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that we paused on it for a second.
Yeah, give me your pain. Dalinar looked toward the sky and let out a raw bellow. He charged through the streets, no longer caring what the people thought of him. He needed to get away from this city. There, the steps up to the Oath Gate. The people of this city had once made a garden out of its platform. Dalinar took the steps two at a time, mm-hmm. lending him endurance. Oh, sorry, the Stormlight was lending him the endurance. At the top, he found a cluster of guards in Colin Blue standing with Navani, and a smattering of scribes. She immediately strode over. Dalinar, I tried to ward him off, but he was insistent. I don't know what he wants. He? Dalinar asks, puffing from his near run. Navani gestured towards the scribes. For the first time, Dalinar noticed that several among them wore short beards of ardents. But those blue robes, what were those? Curates, he thought, from the holy enclave of Valath. Technically, Dalinar himself was head of the Vorin religion, but in practice, the curates guided church doctrine. The staves they bore were wound with gemstones, more ornate than he'd expected. Hadn't most of that pomp had been done away with the fall of the hierarchy? Dalinar Colin, one of them said, stepping forward. He was young for an Ardentia leader, perhaps in his early 40s. His square beard was streaked with a few lines of gray. I am he, Dalinar says, shrugging off Navani's touch. If you would speak with me, let us retire to a place more private. Dalinar Colin, the Ardent said louder, this council of curates declares you a heretic. We cannot tolerate your insistence that the Almighty is not God. You are hereby proclaimed excommunicate and anathema. You have no right. We have every right. The Ardents must watch the light eyes so that you steer your subjects well. That is still our duty, as outlined in the covenants of theocracy, witnessed for centuries. Did you really think that we would ignore what you've been preaching? Dalinar gritted his teeth as the stupid Ardent began outlining Dalinar's heresies one by one, demanding that he deny them. So I thought this was it.
Yeah.
I thought, well, there it goes. It's full on Blackthorn time. Yeah. And
it's clobbering Kaladin, time.
They're too late. It's clobbering time.
Yeah.
The thrill stirred, sensing a fight and sensing blood. I'm going to kill him, a part of Dalinar thought. I have to run now, or I will kill this man.
Yeah.
It was as clear to him as the sun's light, so he ran. He dashed to the Oathgate control building, frantic with the need to escape, and he scrambled up to the keyhole and only then remembered that he didn't have a shard blade that could operate this device. Dalinar, the Stormfather rumbled, something is wrong. Something I cannot see. Something hidden to me. What are you sensing?
So the Stormfather cannot feel the thrill.
Right.
Right.
Hidden from his perception, I guess. I have to get away. I will not be a sword to you. We spoke of this. Dalinar growled. He felt something he could touch. Something beyond places. The power that bound worlds together, his power. Wait, the Stormfather says, this is not right. Dalinar ignored him, reaching beyond and pulling power through. Something bright white manifested in his hand and he rammed it into the keyhole. The Stormfather groaned, a sound like thunder. The power made the Oath Gate work, regardless. As his guards called his name outside, Dalinar flipped the dial that would make only the small building transport, not the entire plateau, and then pushed the keyhole around the outside of the room, using the power as a handhold. A ring of light flashed around the structure, and cold wind poured in through the doorways. He stumbled out onto a platform before Urithiru. The Stormfather pulled back from him, not breaking the bond, but withdrawing his favor.
Yeah. Oh,
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Because he's like, you just did something I told you not to do, and now I'm not going to be there. But this is the more important part, is the thrill flooded in to replace it.
I know.
Oh, jeez.
Man.
Even this far away.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. He couldn't escape. So... It's like when the Stormfather retreated a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's like the thrill was just waiting.
Yeah. It's been biding its time. Space. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You can't escape yourself, Dalinar. Evie's voice said in his mind, this is who you are. Accept it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I wonder about that is that really her? She was definitely of the opinion that, according to the flashbacks, that mm-hmm. that's what he was. But she was also trying so hard to bring him away.
Right. This is not something Evie would have said to him ever.
No. Okay.
Right.
He's just hearing her voice.
She would have said
almost
fight it.
Right.
Right.
So this is a perversion of what she would have said,
right.
Really, is what this is.
Right.
Right. This is deception.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He couldn't run. Blood of my fathers, please, please help me. But to whom was he praying?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that got me.
Yeah. Because he just had a confrontation with the Ardents where he was like, he's the one who said, the Almighty's dead, yo. There is no Almighty anymore. And he might not even ever have been God.
He's on his last legs here,
yeah.
It would seem. And he's reaching out to God anyway.
Right. And he's like, who am I even praying to? Yeah. Jeez Louise,
I mean, how
man.
Much more alone could you feel?
Right. And then he goes, I mean, I'm going to skip the paragraph here, but he goes for the text, this beloved text that he has.
I know. He staggers from the platform in a daze, ignoring questions from soldiers and scribes, makes his way to his room, desperate to find a way to hide from Evie's condemning voice. In his rooms, he pulled a book off the shelf, bound in hog's hide, with thick paper. He held The Way of Kings, as if it were a talisman that would drive back the pain, but it did nothing. Once this book had saved him, but now it seemed useless. He couldn't even read its words.
Yeah.
Dropping the book, he stumbled out of the room. No conscious thought led him to Adolin's chambers or drove him to ransack the younger man's room, but he found what he'd hoped, a bottle of wine kept for a special occasion, violet, prepared in its strength. This represented that third man he'd been. Shame, frustration, and days spent in a haze. Terrible times. Times he'd given up part of his soul in order to forget. But storms. It was either this or start killing again. He raised the bottle to his lips.
At least he's choosing nonviolence.
Yeah, well, that's so.
Hurt others or hurt myself. Those are his choices right now.
He's, and you know what's funny is that, is he really hurting himself? I mean, in a way, but again, he's buying time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Incredible,
what a great chapter.
It's incredible one.
That's one of the best chapters of the entire series, I would say.
Good. I'm glad you liked it so much.
Yeah.
And you said before we started recording that you kind of had hoped that I would have, after reading it, you were surprised that I hadn't made it a live read. But I wanted you to have the opportunity to read it once and then to reread it again because
yeah.
how deep it is.
Oh,
there's no
so
big
impactful.
Revelations in this other than maybe
no,
the fact
really.
That the thrill
no.
left and he didn't fight it back or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's no big, like, oh my God, holy shitballs moment in the chapter. It's really uh-huh. one that you needed to think about a little bit and then reread again on the
yeah.
recording. So I'm glad you enjoyed it, dude. It's a great one.
Oh, so
what's
good.
Your
highlight?
If you could find a
know.
Highlight, yeah, what would be your highlight?
Every word?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't
the
know.
The entire chapter?
Highlight. Geez, you know, it's funny. I didn't really get to one when I finished it because I was just so blown away by it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's start with yours and then and I'll think on it a little more.
My highlight is that the Dalinar gets a POV again. That he gets the
yeah.
we haven't had a POV from him in a while, and
sure.
and it's a really satisfying one. I the other highlight I have here is that give me your pain, and I
yeah.
found it's a miracle. After I said that to you, I thought, I wonder if I can
yeah.
find the quote.
Right.
And I literally grabbed a chunk of book like this big and I flipped to see if I could like start flipping through. And that uh-huh. first grab of a bunch of pages exactly flipped to the right page, the exact quote I was looking for in the first attempt. So I don't know if that's ever happened to anybody else before, but it has happened to me before where, you know, you, and back in the old days, you used to open up a phone book and the fucking number would be right there that you're looking for. So here's the quote.
This is Moash, right?
Yeah, this is Moash, and he's talking to Ken and Saw the Parshendi. Like a bunch of slaves should be able to spot a spy, Ken said. Really? Shouldn't the Spren have been the one to spot him? It's like they wanted something to pin on us. It's like a setup? Moash asked from behind. Yeah, a setup, Ken agreed. They did that a lot. Forgetting words. Or maybe they were simply trying the words out for the first time. Their right. accent was so similar to that of many bridgemen who had been Moash's friends. Let go, Moash, something deep within him whispered. Give up your pain. It's all right. You did what was natural. You can't be blamed. Stop carrying that burden. Let go. So this quote is, give up your pain.
Give up your pain,
in
yeah.
Dalinar's chapter is, give me your pain.
Yeah, give me your pain.
So very, very, very similar moments here.
Yeah, it
where
is,
Moash
it?
Is wow. thinking about what he did to his friends in Bridge 4, and then yeah. there is this voice that stirs inside him that's like, let go of all that. It's okay. You did what right. was you did what was natural. Where if we go back to the Dalinar chapter, it mirrors it a little bit where he says, if you become that man again, it will stop hurting. In your youth, you did what was needed to be done. Like making excuses for the actions that they took. Give me yeah. your pain.
Give
so
me your pain.
So very, very similar.
It's so eerie how something like that can be, you know, for the individual.
Yeah.
It can be exactly what's needed. Like Dalinar, it would be great for him not to feel his pain.
Right.
And in many ways, the thrill is what can take it away.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
Because if you face it, like what you and I are talking about with mm-hmm. regards to, okay, this problem has to be faced.
Right.
Forgiveness mm-hmm. needs to be understood. It's a much more difficult path. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
To live with your memories, to live with your shortcomings, mm-hmm. to live with your failures.
Yep.
Confront them and face them and deal with the consequences and accept all of it.
Mm-hmm.
That is really the road for Dalinar.
Mm-hmm.
Or should we say, that's honor.
Right. That's great. That's great.
So that's honor. But putting honor aside, there's this other thing that can make you feel better right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's this other perspective that can make you feel better right now because the end justifies the means.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all of the peace that was brought from this slaughter.
Right.
Look at everything that will now be built.
You were stronger then.
You were stronger then. You did nothing. Oh, like, it's so complicated. Mm-hmm. Like,
it's so great.
Man, yeah, great chapter. My highlight, I think now, is in talking about it with you, as mm-hmm. I thought, wow, I'm filled with nothing but worry
mm-hmm.
and nothing but a sense of this man that is going to buckle.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to have to go through I don't even know how difficult that would be, especially if it started to affect the other characters that we've grown to experience and love. But my highlight is the hope
mm-hmm.
that ultimately in this chapter, Dalinar got away from this.
Yeah, he's choosing nonviolence.
He went back to Urithiru and he pulled it off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm going to cling to.
Cool. Yeah, that's I like that too. That's definitely a small light in a dark tunnel that, you know, he cool. did choose nonviolence.
Kidding.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. Okay, chapter 101,
mm-hmm.
Deadeye.
Yeah.
Deadeye, yeah, those nautical terms. Or no, sorry, not really a nautical term. It's describing Adolin's...
Yeah.
Adolin's Spren. Sword, I guess you would say.
Yeah, and also Captain Iko's father.
Right.
Yeah, who we find out was a Deadeye as well, who used to be a Knight Radiant, Spren, right, and had the bond broken, which is what happened to my to Adolin's Spren, right?
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really kind of a little almost like Pirates of the Caribbean. Remember when what's his name? Will Turner you find his father as part of the ship,
right?
And it's just he's compartmentalized and tucked away. If
yeah,
you
he's in like, there. Yeah,
but yeah, it was kind of a little creepy. I like that scene a lot. Surprising, but also that these Spren who have been cut off from their previous bond,
yeah,
are kind of listless and like. They're still alive. Like they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't transitioned on or anything like that. And of course, in the case of Vico, he's, you know, keeping his dad there.
Yeah.
Rather than letting him walk off a,
right. Off the, which off is the, like kind of crazy that they would just do whatever. It kind of reminds you of what they talk about with the Parshmen, that if left unguarded, they might just wander around in the forest and just end up getting themselves killed.
Right, right.
Yeah, they just walk off the side of the whale, flip over the railing of the whale, and then fall into the sea of beads. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a very crazy ending to this chapter. Mm-hmm. So Deadeye begins with Mo'alak is very similar to Nurgaul, though instead of inspiring this battle rage, he supposedly granted visions of the future. And in this lore and theology align, seeing the future originates with the unmade and is from the enemy. And that's according to Hesse and Mythica.
Yeah.
In the book Mythica. Mm-hmm. So what does that say for Renarin and his order?
Don't know.
I'm hoping that it's more complicated than Hesse understands here.
We have seen that some of her understanding, that we have understood more than what her understanding is, because this is an old tome and we've been granted with more recent discoveries. So, yeah, let's hope.
Adolin tugged at the jacket. Gosh, I love this jacket thing. It's
amazing. Dude, it's so awesome. Oh, what a light. Gosh. It's such a light thing right after
it's
such
a
heavy
thing.
Yes,
a heavy chapter. Thank you, Brandon, Mr. Sanderson,
Thank
for
you,
that
Adolin.
Levity.
For
Adolin,
just being yourself, fully yourself.
This chapter, it makes me fall even more in love with Adolin.
I know, he's so great.
Doesn't want the throne.
No, I know, he doesn't. He just like, doesn't. I just want to duel and enjoy life.
Can't life be that as opposed to, I'm going to kill someone. Yeah. I'm going to, do war. Okay.
So funny.
Adolin tugged at the jacket, standing in Captain Iko's cabin. The Spren had lent the room to him for a few hours. The jacket was too short, but was the biggest the Spren had had. Adolin had cut off the trousers right below the knees and then tucked the bottoms into his long socks and tall boots. He rolled the sleeves of the jacket up to match, approximating an old style from Thelena. The jacket still looked too baggy, though. Leave it unbuttoned, he decided. The rolled sleeves look intentional that way. He tucked his shirt in, pulled the belt tight. Good by contrast? He studied it in the captain's mirror. It needed a waistcoat. Those, fortunately, weren't too hard to fake. Iko had provided a burgundy coat that was too small for him. He removed the collar and sleeves, stitched the rough edges under, and then let it slit up the back. So, just, you know what? I love taking the time through this.
Me too.
You know, just...
The details matter, right?
Yeah, let's bring in the seams. Let's get some hemming in here. Yes. Let's take our time. Let's look in the mirror. Oh, let's make an adjustment. Oh, you know what? This is a welcome change.
Yeah.
He was just finishing it up with some laces on the back when Iko checked in on him. Adolin buttoned up the improvised waistcoat, threw on the jacket, and then presented himself with hands at his sides. Very nice, Iko says. You look like an honor Spren going to a feast of light. Thanks, Adolin says, inspecting himself. The jacket needs to be longer, but I didn't trust myself to let down the hems. Iko studied him with metal eyes, bronze with holes for the pupils like Adolin had seen done for some statues. Even the Spren's hair appeared sculpted in place. Iko could almost have been a soul-cast king from an age long past.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is cool. I like that description. You were a ruler among your kind, weren't you? Iko asked. Why did you leave? The humans we get here are refugees, merchants, or explorers. They're not kings. King? Was Adolin a king? Surely his father would decide not to continue with the abdication now that Elikar had passed. No answer, Iko said. Well, that's fine. But you were a ruler among them. I can read it in you. Highborn status is important to humans. Well, maybe a little too important, eh? First of all, love that response from Adolin.
Me too.
And the Canadian A, I'll take it.
Yeah, Adolin's Canadian.
I'll take it. Adolin said, adjusting the neck scarf he'd made from the handkerchief. Yes, let's be concerned for a moment about our neck scarves.
Yes, cravats are very important.
Cravats, yes, Fred, Scooby, let's do it.
Yes, please. Adolin's going to start making nets for everything. He's like, I need to make a net. That's how we catch odium.
That is true, Iko said. You are all human. And so none of you, regardless of birth, can be trusted with oaths. A contract to travel, that's fine. But humans will betray trust if it's given to them. The Spren then frowned and seemed to grow embarrassed. Well, that was rude, he admits. Rudeness doesn't necessarily imply untruth, though. Wow, great deal of wisdom from Adolin here.
Yeah, I know.
I did not mean as an insult. Regardless, you are not to be blamed. Betraying oaths is simply your nature as a human.
Right.
That's an interesting perception coming from this Spren.
Right.
From Iko. I unfortunately agree.
Right.
I think that we all stumble and fail and go through all of these things. And of course, the nature of our experience, our life experience, is to deal with all of those failings and trippings and shortcomings as we move along.
Right. It's kind of, things are parallel a little bit here because he's like, Adolin's about to use his father as a way to say, actually, that's not true. You don't know my father. My father would never break oaths. Like using his father as an example of greatness. And we just literally went through this chapter with Dalinar. It's very, very fitting.
It's so fitting.
Have we mentioned in this pod yet, Brandon Sanderson's really good at fucking writing. He's really good. Like, I don't know if we've ever said it out loud. Like, I know this whole podcast is just like gushing about his writing skills.
But maybe, is this the first moment where we actually get to say about this author? Wow,
really good at writing.
You are really good at your craft.
It's like those tweets you see where they're like, LeBron James is really good at basketball. Like, Brandon Sanderson is really good at writing. Like, he's really good.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, dunks.
It's not by mistake. He didn't just stumble into this. Like, he's really good at this stuff.
He really is. Oh, man, I hope that there can be at the very least between the Storm Pod and this and Brandon, Mr. Sanderson, a brief, hopeful introduction.
Yeah, maybe someday we'll get there.
That would really be a delight. Mm-hmm. Nature as a human. Yeah. Well, you don't know my father, Adolin says. Still, the conversation left him uncomfortable. Not because of Iko's words. Spren tended to say odd things, and Adolin didn't take offense. Mm-hmm. More that he felt his own growing worry that he might actually have to take the throne. He'd grown up knowing it could happen, but he'd always grown up wishing desperately that it never would. Mm-hmm. In his quiet moments, he'd assumed this hesitance was because a king couldn't apply himself to things like dueling and, well, enjoying life.
Right. He just wants to enjoy life.
You know, it's a reminder. We need this voice. Mm-hmm. Right? We need this voice. What if it went deeper? What if he'd always known inconsistency lurked within him? He couldn't keep pretending he was the man his father wanted him to be. I like this thought. He doesn't want to be the fourth man.
Right.
I don't want to be someone my dad wants me to pretend to be.
Right.
I can't and I won't.
Right.
Yeah. I am going to be me. Just hopefully he can keep within that intact all of the battle of, you know, keeping back the thrill. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's so many battles that need to be won, if you will, in this world on Rashar during this time.
It's funny, eh? Like, Adolin, he's just very self-aware.
He is.
You know?
You're absolutely right.
People might call him his character simple or something, but he's not. He's just very self-aware of who he is and what he wants. He hasn't really even struggled with killing Sadeus. You know, he's like, maybe I shouldn't have, maybe I should have. But he's like, you know what? The world's better off without him, so I'm just not going to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, that's where he shares that with, Jasnah. For me, that little concern.
Yeah,
little...
and I mean, it makes sense that cousins are a little bit alike, right?
Yeah. Yeah, tricky stuff that still. I'll always have that as a concern.
Mm-hmm.
What if it went deeper? Yeah. He didn't want to be pretending to be the man that his father wanted him to be. Well, it was moot anyway. Alethkar as a nation had fallen. He accompanied Iko back out of the captain's cabin, out onto the deck, walking over to Shallan and Kaladin and Azure, who stood by the starboard whale. Each wore a shirt, trousers, and jacket that they'd bought off of the Reachers with dun spheres. The gemstones weren't worth nearly as much on this side, but apparently trade with the other side did happen, so they had some value. Kaladin gaped at Adolin, looking down at his boots and then up at the neck scarf and then focusing on the waistcoat. That befuddled expression of Kaladin's alone made the work worthwhile. I love this so much from Adolin. He's like, yeah, bridge boy, take it in.
Yeah, this is it. This is what good looks look like.
How, Kaladin demands. Did you sew that? Adolin grinned.
Yeah.
Kaladin looked like a man trying to wear his childhood suit. He'd never button that coat across his broad chest. Shallan fit her skirt and jacket better from a pure measurement standpoint, but the cut wasn't flattering. And Azure looked far more, normal without her dramatic breastplate and cloak. I'd practically kill for a skirt, Shallan noted. You're kidding, Azure says. No, I'm getting tired of the way trousers rub my legs. Adolin, could you sew me a dress? Maybe stitch the legs of these trousers together? He rubbed his chin. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
He's I think I can make you a dress.
Yeah.
Him making a dress, I want that really bad. I want that.
I want that for us.
I really do. I want that for us. It doesn't work that way, Adolin says. I can't magic more cloth out of nothing. He trails off. As overhead, the clouds suddenly rippled, glowing with a strange mother-of-pearl iridescence.
Mm-hmm.
Another high storm, their second since arriving. The group stopped and stared up at the dramatic light show. Nearby, the Reachers seemed to stand up more straight and move about their sailing duties more vigorously. See, Azure says, I told you. They must feed off it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Shallan narrowed her eyes and then grabbed her sketchbook and stalked over to begin interviewing some of the Spren. Kaladin trailed away to join his Spren at the prow of the ship, where she liked to stand. Adolin often noticed him looking southward as if anxiously wishing the ship to move more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
He lingered by the side of the ship, watching the beads crash, and when he looked up, he found Azure studying him. "Did you really sew that?" she asks. There wasn't much sewing involved, Adolin says. The scarf and jacket hide most of the damage I did to the waistcoat, which used to be a smaller jacket. Still, she says, it's an unusual skill for a royal. How many royals have you known? More than some might assume. Adolin nodded. I see. And are you enigmatic on purpose, or is it a kind of accidental thing? I like this little conversation between these two. And it could be that as we get this next morsel from Azure, she could be talking about herself.
I think she is.
Now, I don't know that because it's the first time, but it's just, it seems like one of those conversations like, oh, I have a friend
who is
going through something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So now I don't know that for sure, but what an interesting character this would be if we have that, like a royal who from another world gave up her duties, responsibilities, you know, and here she is, seemingly trying to participate in some grander contribution to something, you know? Like, maybe it's like, oh, I'm giving up my duty here, but yeah, but it's because I have an understanding
another
of another duty.
Do. Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Am I up there? Is that a good theory? You're pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, I can't give too much away. All that will become clear eventually.
Okay. All right. Anyways, Azure leaned against the ship's whale, breeze blowing her short hair. She looked more youthful when not wearing the breastplate. Mid-30s? A little of both, she says. I discovered when I was younger that being too open with strangers went poorly for me. But in answer to your question, I have known royals, including one woman who left it behind. Throne, family, responsibilities. She abandoned her duty? He asks. That's practically inconceivable. Mm-hmm. Well, the throne was better served by someone who enjoyed sitting on it. Well, duty isn't about what you enjoy. Now, this seems to fly in the face of what he was saying a little earlier. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to enjoy life.
Yeah.
Well, so Adolin's got a bit of that understanding of, I do want to enjoy life, but my father...
But I have responsibilities.
He has taught me about duty and responsibility and honor, yeah. It's about doing what is demanded of you, he says, in serving the greater good. You can't just abandon responsibility because you feel like it. Azure glanced at Adolin, and he felt himself blush. Sorry, he says. My father and my uncle might have instilled me with a little passion on this topic. Mm-hmm. It's all right, Azure says. Maybe you're right. And maybe there's something in me that knows it. I always find myself in situations like in Kolinar, leading the wall guard. I get too involved. And then abandon everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you didn't abandon the wall guard, Azure. You couldn't have prevented what happened. Perhaps. I can't help feeling that this is merely one in a long string of duties abdicated, of burdens set down. Perhaps to disastrous results. For some reason, she put her hand on the pommel of her shard blade when she said that.
Mm-hmm.
Then she looked up at Adolin. But of all the things that I've walked away from, the one I don't regret is allowing someone else to rule.
See? Earlier, yes. She says, the throne was better served by someone who enjoyed sitting on it. I have known royals, including a woman who left it behind. And then here she's saying, of all the things that I left behind, letting someone else rule, I don't
regret. So she gave it away.
She gave herself away
she
here.
She did.
Yeah.
She's a royal.
Royal.
I know. I was just thinking of, is that Lord? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. It is confirmed. It's right here.
Yeah. But of all the things I've walked away from, the one I don't regret is allowing someone else to rule. Sometimes the best way to do your duty is to let someone else, someone more capable, try carrying it.
Hang on. Where are you now?
That's just at the end of that paragraph.
Is allowing someone else to rule. Yes, best. Let someone else more capable. Yeah. Well, such a foreign idea, he thinks. Sometimes you took up a duty that wasn't yours, but abandoning one, just giving it to someone else. That seems foreign to him right now, but.
Right.
But maybe.
If it's for the best of the people.
It could come to pass that Dalinar.
Here's a question for you. I'll ask you a question
Hang on. Dalinar could be unfit to rule.
Mm-hmm.
He also could, unfortunately, in this story, he may not make it.
Mm-hmm.
and it falls to Adolin.
Right.
And maybe when it comes down to Adolin, if he would take the throne, he may think on this conversation with Aesir and say, I can't do it either.
Right. Right.
And then it may go to Renarin.
Let me ask you a question about when Gavilar dies, his son, not his oldest, Yasna,
Elokar,
but his youngest child, Elokar, becomes king. So would it have been better for Alethkar, for the Alethi, if someone more suited, like, let's say, we know that Elokar was not suited to become king when he was young. He only really became suitable to be to be king before he died, when he started taking over with the squad in Kolinar. We talked about how, wow, he's actually the fitting the clothes that he's been wearing this whole time now.
He's
right?
stepping up.
So would Alethkar and the whole country have been better off giving it to someone then that had been more suitable, like Dalinar, or like one of the other high princes? Someone who was actually capable of ruling. Would it have been better then?
Let's not forget that I don't really think that Dalinar has the real experience of being a king.
Right. Doesn't. He does have the experience of being a ruler and a high prince, which is like being the head of a province or whatever.
Right.
But
you know what's funny? Is that perhaps, you know what? You raise an interesting question here, because maybe Dalinar would have been shielded more from returning to be the Blackthorn as a king,
right,
and not in the battle.
Right. He wouldn't have had to fight at all.
Well, perchance. I mean, in Elokar's case,
he's
a king, but he was also going back for his wife.
Right. And in that instance, but when they went to avenge Gavilar at the Shattered Plains, Elokar didn't really go out and fight often on these raids because he wasn't capable. Dalinar had been king, let's say it had gone to him instead of the kids, one of the kids, then maybe Dalinar's still fighting because he's still the Blackthorn. So
remains to be seen whether or not the kingship would have shielded him or not. That's an interesting question. That's interesting. I don't know the answer to that. Where I thought you were going with it is Yasna older than Elokar?
Yasna is older than Elokar.
So did she abdicate?
No, she wasn't. She wasn't given the throne at all because she's a woman.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. I wasn't clear whether they had that kind of.
I don't know if she would have. Even if she would have wanted it. Like, let's say if she that's not the way it works, and it would have went to her first, she might have just abdicated it because she's not interested in that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Being a scholar and all that stuff, she might not have been interested in being a ruler. But maybe she would have been more capable than her younger brother at doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't.
Right.
Yeah, maybe.
So yeah.
Well,
who knows?
What I love about putting Yasna in charge is that it sounds like she would put the voice of reason and great amounts of study at the forefront of decision making.
True. True.
Like a Veristatalian approach. I don't think she would feel her way through it. She would.
Mm-hmm. So the throne in this case seems Adolin thinks is going to fall to him.
Yeah.
He thinks right now that maybe his father won't abdicate now that all this has happened.
Right.
We still don't know the fate of the baby. They have to assume the baby is gone, like Elokar's child. So that means it skips that line and goes to the closest, which is Dalinar and his sons.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot.
Dalinar and his. Oh, yeah, Dalinar, his sons, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Sorry, when you said sons, I thought you were.
But if
I kind of got ahead here. I'm like,
another
okay, Shallan. No, I was thinking Shallan. Yep. Okay, now they're together. Now they're married. Now they've got kids. Okay, let's go.
Right. Adolin and his sons. Yeah, right.
Yeah, Adolin's sons, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting to think about on Adolin's point of view, because he is really like, I don't want it, but it might have to be me. And then now Aesir's like, you know, you don't have to have it. You can give it to someone who actually deserves it or who wants to have it.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, that reminds me of, I mean, it endeared me more to Aelin here because I love that moment in Gladiator, the movie, where Caesar says, that's why it must be you, Commodus. Or it's not Commodus, Marcus Aurelius, to become Caesar, because you don't want it.
Right.
it has to be someone who doesn't want it.
Right.
Who isn't power hungry or, you know. Mm-hmm. So this thing with Aesir, man, you know what? She's a royal. I love this. I love this.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You could have been queen, mm-hmm. Aesir, but you know, you must insist on that short haircut. So forget it.
That's it. You're done.
And she's like, I'm not giving up the haircut. Forget it. This is my jam.
This is it.
Yeah.
Screw long hairs.
Yeah. I actually really like picturing this character, Aesir, with the short hair. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I dig it. I look terrible, don't I? She finally asked, nudging him in the side. No makeup, with hair that hasn't been washed in days, and now wearing a dumpy set of workers' clothing. This is Shallan speaking
to
Aelin after I think Aesir excuses herself. Yeah, she goes to get something to drink. Mm-hmm. Aelin says, I don't think you're capable of looking terrible. In all of their color, even those clouds can't compete.
Oh,
come on. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, dude.
Iridescent clouds overhead, like mm-hmm. sparkling or shimmering. It's like a northern light show or something.
So nice.
In Shadesmar. And he says that to her. Come on.
So great.
They passed through a sea of floating candle flames, which represented a village on the human side. The flames were huddled together in patches, hiding from the storm. Eventually, the clouds faded, but they were supposedly near the city now. So Shallan got excited, watching for it. Finally, she pointed on the horizon. Celebrant nestled not far down its coast. As they drew closer, they spotted other ships entering or leaving the port, each pulled by at least two of the Mandras. Mm-hmm. Captain Iko walked over. Well, we'll soon arrive. Let's go get your Deadeye. Adolin nodded, patting Shallan on the back, and followed Iko down to the brig, a small room far aft in the cargo hold. Iko used keys to unlock the door, revealing the spren of Adolin's sword sitting on a bench inside. She looked at him with those haunting, scratched-out eyes, her string face void of emotion. I wish you hadn't locked her in here, Adolin said, stooping down in to peer through the squat doorway. Can't have them on deck, Iko says. Says them, interesting. Mm-hmm. They don't watch where they're walking and fall off. I'm not going to spend days trying to fish out a lost Deadeye. She moved to join Adolin, and then Iko reached over to shut the cell. Wait. Iko, I saw something moving back there. That's my father. Your father? You keep your father locked up? Can't stand the thought of him wandering around somewhere, Iko says. Have to keep him locked away, though. He'll go searching for the human carrying his corpse. Otherwise, walk right off the deck. Your father was a radiant spren? It's rude to ask about such ones. Rudeness doesn't imply untruth, though, right?
From the conversation they had earlier in the chapter.
Bro.
Perfect.
Come on. This is Adolin. Come on.
It's perfect.
He is made himself new clothing.
Yeah.
Debating about the throne, speaking with Aesir, contemplating the wisdom of her story, poetry and language to Shallan complimenting her, mm-hmm. Showing great wisdom, and I mean, just Adolin. I mean, come
great.
On.
Yeah, he's
the
awesome.
Guy's incredible.
Yeah.
Rudeness doesn't imply untruth. No, it doesn't. Iko turns and regarded him, and then smiled. And nodded toward Adolin Spren. What is she to you? A friend. A tool, he says. You use her corpse on the other side, don't you? Well, I won't blame you. I've heard stories of what they can do, and I am a pragmatic person. Just don't pretend that she's your friend. Mm-hmm. By the time they reached the deck, the ship was approaching the docks. Iko started calling orders, though his crew clearly knew what to do already. The celebrant docks were wide and large, longer than the city. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Ships pulled in along stone piers. Though Adolin couldn't figure out how they got back out again, hook the Mandras to the stern and pull the ship out that way? The shore was marked by long warehouses set in rows, which marred the view of the city proper. in Nadelin's opinion. The ship drew up at a berth on a specific pier, guided by a reacher with semaphore. That's interesting. Iko's sailors unlatched a piece of the hull, which unfolded to steps, and a sailor hiked down immediately to greet another group of reachers. These began unlatching the mandras with long hooks. As each flying spren was released from the rigging, the ship sank a little farther into the bead ocean. Eventually, it seemed, though, to settle onto some braces and steady there. Pattern came over, humming to himself and meeting the rest of them as they gathered on the deck, Iko stepping up. A deal fulfilled and a bond kept. Thank you, Captain. God, I love that.
Yeah.
I just feel, I like the sense of completion in a story. Like, you've just gone through this little break, this little thing, and I just, that line, I don't know, for some reason, it just feels great.
It almost feels like it's the, like the end of a contract for him. He's like, we've done it.
Yeah. No, I'll take it. I really liked that when I was reading it. I want to see that again. Hang on. And a bond, yeah. A deal fulfilled and a bond kept. I hope that comes up again. Hmm. I like that line a lot. Mm-hmm. It's one of my little highlights. Thank you, Captain, Adolin says. You're sure you won't take us to the rest of the way, to the portal between realms? I'm certain, Iko said firmly. The region around cultivation's perpendicularity has gained a poor reputation of late. Too many ships vanishing. Mm-hmm. What about the Thalen city? Kaladin asks. Could you take us there? No, I unload goods here and then head east, away from trouble. And if you'll accept a little advice, stay in Shadesmar. The physical realm is not a welcoming place these days. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, you can just stay here.
Talk about abandoning your oath.
Talk about abandoning your
world. Or hiding away from the world.
Oh, right.
Just stay here.
Yeah.
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 Look, you know, Shallan and Adolin and Kaladin can look at themselves and go, look, we're fifth level, but this is beyond us. They've got 17th level problems in Roshar right now. We're out.
We need to adventure here for a while before we can.
We're checking out. We're not doing this. Okay. I unload goods here. Don't stray too far outside with human cities nearby. Oh, yeah, sorry. The physical realm is not welcoming. We'll take that under advisement, Adolin says. Is there anything we should know about the city? And he says, don't stray too far outside. There will be anger spren in the area. Try not to draw too many lesser spren and maybe see if you can find a place to tie up that dead eye of yours. The dock registrar is that building ahead of us with the blue paint. You'll find a list of ships willing to take on passengers, but you'll have to go to each one of them individually and make sure that they're equipped to take humans and haven't already booked their cabins. The building next to that one's a money changer where you can trade Stormlight for notes of exchange. My daughter used to work there before she ran off chasing stupid dreams. He bade them farewell, and the group of travelers walked down the gangway onto the docks. Curiously, Syl still wore an illusion. Alethi tan, her hair black, clothing red. Was being an honor spren really that big of a deal here? They've mentioned that a number of times.
Yeah.
So Adolin said as they reached the pier, how are we going to do this? In the city, I mean. I've counted out our marks, Shallan says. It's been long enough since they were renewed. They'll almost certainly lose their Stormlight in the next few days. A few have already gone out. We might as well trade for supplies. We can keep the bromes and the larger gemstones for surge binding. First stop is the money changer, then, Adolin says. After that, we should see if we can buy more rations, Kaladin says, just in case. And we need to look for passage. But to where? Azir said. The Perpendicularity? Or Thalen City? So where does the Perpendicularity take them? That's the peaks, right?
Yeah, that's the Hornader Peaks. And that's far away from Thalen City. And Kaladin's like, we need to go to Thalen City. That's where we're going to be the most needed.
And no.
But the thing is that Shallan makes a good point, is that once we get to the Oath Gate on this side, she has no idea how to activate it on this side.
Right.
So they might get there and be stuck. They might not be able to get across. So at the very least, Cultivation's perpendicularity is an open gateway they can get through.
Right. And of course, I don't think either of these roads leads to Dalinar, though.
Well, Kaladin thinks that one does, that Thalen City will eventually lead there. Even though Dalinar's not there now, Kaladin believes that he will be there and that he'll be that Kaladin will be needed. So it's tough. They don't have very many good options right now.
Let's see what our options are, Aelin says. Maybe there will be a ship to one destination, but not the other. Let's send one group to inquire with ships and another to get supplies. Shallan, do you have a preference which you'd rather do? I'll look for passage, she says. I have experience with it. I made a lot of trips when chasing down Yasna.
Right.
Sounds good. We should put one Radiant in each group, so Bridge Boy and Syl, you'll go with me. Pattern and Azure will go with Shallan. Well, maybe I should help Shallan, Syl began. We'll need a Spren with us, Adolin said, to explain culture here. Let's go trade in those spheres first, though.
Mm-hmm.
I like Syl's piping up like, well,
maybe
I
should hang out with Shallan.
Have we had a conversation between those two?
I don't think so. And if they have, it's been off page. So,
yeah.
What's your highlight for this chapter? It's kind of a small one. It kind of, you know, pales in comparison to the last one we just did. But what do you think?
Oh, come on. It's Adolin.
Adolin's coat. Adolin's outfit.
Oh, it's Adolin's coat. It's Adolin's, you know, comments to Shallan. Yeah, it's Adolin all the way here for me. Yeah, it's great. It's nice to have somebody who just wants to enjoy life.
Yeah.
I don't want to make my life about war and killing and hating. Mm-hmm. Like I have to do this because of this truth that I believe or understand, and mm-hmm. that's what I got to be, blah, blah, blah.
I agree.
It's so interesting.
I agree that that's what it is. It's this whole thing with Adolin. He's just great. I do want to point out this whole Iko's daughter running away chasing her dreams thing. That's kind of a weird drop to put in there. Is that a character we're going to meet in the future? Is that like...
Yeah, I think for sure.
So yeah, I don't know what it is, but it's obviously a little nugget that Sanderson has placed for us for the future. So
as well as his father with these dead eyes.
Yeah. Well, if his father was a Knight Radiant Spren and his daughter has run away to chase her dreams, maybe she means to be like, she wants to be like her grandfather and bond someone with the nail bond. So I don't know. Maybe we'll meet that Radiant at some point. Who knows if that's even the case? We don't know if that's what she's trying to do, but sounds pretty interesting. So yeah, it's pretty cool. So let's get to the info dump. First off, we want to say thank you to Buzzkill Joe for all the hard work he does for the info dump. We really appreciate you, buddy. Chapter 100, old friend, Gved is the old man who they, Dalinar had some familiarity with. They fought in a battle at Slick Rock before. Buzzkill Joe points out Slick Rock is a place, presumably for having lots of slick rocks. In Way of Kings Chapter 1, Kaladin defeated Helleron on a similar field in the Sadeas Princedom. The field between two forces was bare with flat, slick rocks. So not sure if that's the same place, but had the same kind of environment around them. Yeah. Pretty cool.
Interesting.
Someone says Tons Palms as a slang term. New slang, old format, Nalan's eyes, Ash's eyes, or Nalan's hand, Ash's eyes, Kalek's tongue have all been used. Kalek's breath, Ishar's soul. This is Tons Palms. So Herald of War, his palms are probably very calloused and hard. Obviously it has something to do with that, which is really, really cool. Vaidnar, we obviously spent some time there with Dalinar. Formerly one of the great cities of Roshar, known for its amazing gardens, has been devastated by the Civil War. So pretty sad, obviously, so much so that it drives Dalinar a little mad when he's there. Nergaul obviously is a unmade. His influence, much like Molak's, is likely regional, which we kind of know because it's just about his the space that he can affect. Half shard shields, The implication is that the half shards trap a true Spren, not a lesser Spren, which we kind of talked about already. And then the fabricating of Fabrials is enslaving them. So that's that's a whole other philosophical thing that Dalinar didn't want to get into, and I think that Brandon Sanderson did not want to get into in this moment either. We've got a lot of stuff to think about. Maybe, you know, maybe the treatment of the house elves will be for another book.
A little bit of a Harry Potter reference here.
So yeah, legendary sky metal, maybe similar to the wall guard used, that the wall guard used to mask its soul caster, the metal plates that, that Wit gave to, Azure. Remember we're talking about when they lined that room so that they could use their soul caster? It was a strange metal. Maybe Buzzkill here is saying that maybe it's the same metal. We have the Council of Curates.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They hold ornate staffs wound with gemstones, dressed in blue. We haven't really seen them before. They're just like the upper level of the Ardentia. he has here Bondsmith optional subclass feature, which is really hilarious. He somehow was able to summon something to use for the keyhole. So he's suggesting that maybe it's like a D&D thing where you can have a subclass where maybe this Bondsmith can have a sword, which is really hilarious. And then the Sea Chulls, shallows moved in the shallows, beasts two or three times as big as chulls, their shells peeking up from the depths of the waves. So these underwater creatures, which is really, really cool. So then chapter 100, which is Deadeye. There's not a lot here. But
101, I think, is Deadeye.
Oh, 101, sorry. 101, Deadeye.
Yeah.
Supposedly, Azure was a royal who abdicated in the past, which is neat information for us to have. Adolin kind of makes his outfit in an old Thalina style, which is hilarious because he's always on the current styles, but he knew that what he had to use actually had to mimic an older style, which is better than just wearing rags, I guess. Light Spren, Iko studied him with metal eyes, bronze with holes and pupils like Adolin had seen before. This is really cool that these Light Spren look really, really neat. The Feasts of Lights. You look like an Honor Spren going to a Feasts of Lights. This seems to be like a very fancy Spren party. The Deadeyes, the name for the Spren's dead blades. They reach out to the human. They search out their human carrying them at least as well as they can on the Shademar side. So it seems like these Deadeyes will try to be in and around where their human is, like the mirrored version of them. So this is why Iko keeps his father locked up, because he'll just wander around looking for looking for his wielder, which is horrible. So he has a guess about Iko's daughter. Do you want me to read it? It might be a little spoilery, but I don't think this is just a theory he has. So it's not really confirmed.
So he says it's a theory. So yeah,
my daughter used to work there before she ran off chasing stupid dreams. At this point, we don't know for sure, but Timber, Venli's Spren, could be a Light Spren. And it says that both Yim, the cobbler, and the stump from Edge Dancer's Spren looked like light reflected on a wall from a mirror. But those ones are not Light Spren. He's just thinking that maybe it could be Timber. So that's his guess, is that how we were just like, it's got to be someone. So he thinks that maybe Timber could be Iko's daughter. So pretty cool to think about.
Interesting.
She's already been introduced into the story, so maybe that's what it is. That would be really, really neat.
That's cool. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so thanks a lot to Buzzkill Joe for his info dump. We really appreciate it. Yeah, so that's the end of the episode, everyone. We are doing chapters 102 and 103 next. We are really trying to hit this hard. Jack and I recorded two episodes this weekend, really trying to pad the numbers here so that we can get some stuff out. Our real main concern is being able to do a Sander Lanch at the end and be able to release two episodes a week for the rest of the book like we used to do. It's a real thing that we really enjoy doing, and we know that you guys enjoy it too. So yeah, we're going to really try to focus in on get this done. So if you want to be part of the Discord server, go to patreon.com/heroesof. We have some cool stuff coming up here with live reads and such, so you definitely want to be part of that. So go to patreon.com/heroesof and sign up. It's all right there. Early access, all this kind of fun stuff. So if you want to reach out to us and tell us about any of the things, any of the musings, who do you think Aiko's daughter is in the world?
Right.
If you think that Buzzkill's Joe's theory is right or not, you let us know what you think. You can do so at heroesofacathar@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter or on Instagram at the Storm Pod. You can find us on the subreddit, the Storm Pod, and the Facebook page. So yeah, that's great, dude. Awesome job. Heavy first chapter, light second chapter.
Great two chapters here.
Yeah, it's a good episode. Yeah, thank you everyone for listening. We love you very much. Until next time,
take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Acathra.